This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 56. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focusing on everything to do with fantasy books, whether you're looking at epic fantasy, urban fantasy, your favorites are swords and sorcery, grimdark, whatever the case may be. We try to cover the best and brightest books and authors from the whole fantasy world here on the show. And we add in some other special guests we run into along the way, too. Now, in my author world this week, I'm actually gearing up for the launch of book 3 in my Broken Throne series. Queen of Avalon continues this urban fantasy tale in a world where magic is prohibited and gangster mages run charms past the cops and federal agents chasing after them. I'm excited about it. It's really moving along well. The first two books are doing decently, and I'm appreciating everybody's support there. I'm also deep into finishing up the writing and editing of Cyber's Underground, book 3 in the Sapiens Run trilogy, and I hope to have that finished and off to the editor by the end of next week, so cross your fingers for me on that one. As always, if you're interested in more information on my books and what I'm up to, check out my fan group on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, and on my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you, so please reach out and contact me either place. I'd love to hear from you, and I will get back to you. Let's go ahead and jump in here for my new author for this week. Alan Baxter is a multi-award-winning British-Australian author who writes supernatural thrillers, dark fantasy, and urban horror. He rides a motorcycle and loves his dogs. He also teaches kung fu. He lives among the dairy paddocks on the beautiful south coast of New South Wales, Australia, with his wife, son, and two crazy hounds. You might know his books. He's the author of the dark fantasy thriller trilogy Bound, Obsidian, and Abduction, the Alex Kane series, and the dark supernatural duology Realm Shift and Mage Sign, which is books in the Balance 1 and 2. His latest novel is Devouring Dark, an urban horror thriller, and I have just started looking at it. It's awesome. In addition to all his novels, Alan has written about 80 short fiction, short stories, and other publications in journals and anthologies in Australia, the US, UK, France, Germany, and Japan. He's won multiple awards and had many nominations for that short work as well. We had a great time talking about writing dark fantasy and how connecting with readers is so important for authors. So check out my interview with Alan coming up right now. Alan, welcome to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm really excited to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
So why don't you introduce yourself to our audience of readers and writers and tell us a little bit about who you are and what got you started writing?
Okay. Well, I'm Alan Baxter. I write a bunch of stuff. I never sort of made a genre I didn't like, but I tend to write a lot of dark fantasy and horror, a lot of urban stuff, but a lot of my urban fantasy is actually kind of reworked epic fantasy and mythic fantasy just set in our world. So that's the sort of sandbox I like to play in. I was greatly inspired back in the day by people like Clive Barker and their ability to write the fantastical and the dark together. And that's kind of what inspires me. So I've been playing in those arenas with short stories and novels for close to 15 years now.
What got you started writing? Have you written like all your life? Is it something you always aspired to in school, or is it something you woke up one day and said, "Hey, I want to be a writer"?
Well, it was sort of a little bit of both, really. I mean, it was a realization later in life, but I've written all along. As my first sort of memory of writing is being about 7 years old in school, and we were sent home for the midterm break, and when we were told to come back with a story about what we did during our holiday. So most people came back with a paragraph about going to their grandparents' house or something like that. I came back with 7 pages about a guy who goes back in time and fights dinosaurs. And that was just normal to me. And then the teacher had me read that out in class, and it was kind of bizarre watching all these other kids listening with interest to something I'd written. And from then on, I sort of loved the idea of storytelling, and I did a lot of role-playing as a kid and a teenager, and I would like to be in charge of the game rather than a player. So I got to tell stories through designing campaigns for D&D and stuff like that. But it was all just kind of like a hobby, you know, just an interest for a while. And then sort of in my mid to late 20s, I suddenly had this revelation. I was like, well, why don't I actually try to do this properly? Why don't I, you know, aim to get published and look to become a professional rather than just a hobbyist? And so that's what I started to pursue then. So something I'd always done, but not something I did seriously until a bit later in life.
It's funny. I've talked to so many authors that have at one point or another in their lives been game masters for role-playing games. And it really makes a perfect way to test out stories in a live environment and see people's reactions and see how characters interact to the situation you've come up with.
Yeah, it works sort of both ways too. Like when I started doing it, a lot of what I was doing was playing with ideas, and I would read books. I read a lot of fantasy and horror from a very early age, and I would design games that were basically a reworking of a book or a series that I'd read. And it was like, well, if I wrote that series, this is how I would do it. And then that kind of developed where I stopped basing my campaigns on stuff I'd already read and started basing my campaigns on ideas of my own from the outset. And yeah, then it became like you just described, you know, sort of testing ideas out on people and seeing how people responded to certain ideas and stories. And yeah, eventually then started writing those down as prose rather than as campaigns.
Yeah, it's kind of developing that instinct, I think, early on for kind of getting a sense of what people's reactions are going to be to a situation. And then when you write it, when you start writing those things later on, it becomes something that, you know, kind of comes from within because you've internalized that process.
Yeah, you get this idea of story beats, and you get to sort of spot stuff that's kind of dull and not really interesting where the players lose interest, and you're like, you know what, they don't even need to know this. I can just move on. Things like that. It gives you, and if you read a lot as well and you sort of naturally internalize story structure from novels that you read, the two things meld together very well.
Yeah, there's a rhythm to writing a good story, don't you think?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, initially everybody sort of tries to get this idea of the three-act structure, which is definitely a good starting place. But so long as you maintain rhythm, as you say, it doesn't have to be three acts. It can be five, seven, nine. So long as you keep a rhythm going and you keep that process of, you know, sort of trying and failing and building story and developing character all the way through. And I think it's something you develop a sort of a natural sense for. At first, you kind of have to figure out that rhythm. But then once you've been writing for a while, you sort of develop a natural sense for rhythm, and it tends to sort of come through in the process of writing in the first place. I write far fewer drafts of novels now than I used to because my instinct for the flow of the thing is better from the outset.
Yeah, it's interesting how, you know, that first book can take years sometimes for writers, and then they look at other authors that are turning out several books a year and they go, how are they doing that? But you're right, it's just like any other muscle that it's a muscle memory thing. You start kind of developing that sense, and so the things that you were skipping and tripping over before don't bother you as much, and you're able to move much faster.
Yeah, and it kind of, even before the initial process of writing, I find that sort of as the story's forming in my mind, it forms more cohesively. Like back before, I would have a lot of ideas and I would start trying to click them together as I was writing, whereas these days when the ideas come through, that my brain kind of sorts them out before I even get to the page. And so even getting that first draft down, whether I've done a lot of planning or not, getting that first draft down tends to go a lot more smoothly than it ever used to. So, as you say, it's basically practice. Yeah.
So I'm curious. I was looking over your website, and you have a fantastic website at alanbaxteronline.com. People should go definitely check it out because it's gorgeous. But
I'm always tinkering with it. I like my website. I'm quite pleased with it.
Yeah, it's great. But you call yourself a warrior scribe. Where does that come from?
That's something that happened about 10 years or so ago. I've been writing professionally for a long time now, but for a lot longer than that. But for my whole life, really, I've been a martial artist. And my day job, if you like, is I run a martial arts academy. I teach kung fu. And I basically split my time between those two things, between running those classes and writing. And if I'm not taking care of my son, then that's, I'm doing one or other of those things. And I was at a convention, I don't even know, at least 10 years ago. And one of my good friends, who's a writer and editor, we were hanging out and her husband was there. And so we were chatting and she introduced me to him and initially introduced me as a writer. And she said, oh, Alan's also a martial artist and blah, blah, blah. And this guy, Tom, he said, oh, you're a warrior scribe. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. I like that turn of phrase. And we laughed and joked about it. But then it kind of stuck because other people overheard it. And so it sort of stuck. And then I would turn up to conventions later and people would be like, oh, the warrior scribe is here. And so eventually I just went, okay, fair enough, and owned it. So I actually own the domain name warriorscribe.com, which will also send you just straight to my website.
That's great, though. You know, it's you know, as authors, we struggle with branding so often. You know, I talk to a lot of authors that are still kind of feeling out their choices. And even though you said you haven't met a genre you didn't like, there's still that core of you coming through that. And I think Warrior Scribe, just based upon a little bit I've read, I think is a great way to describe your writing.
Yeah, it does seem to fit, which I guess is why it stuck as far as it did, because the people that already knew me and my writing were laughing like, oh yeah, that's a great description. And for people who don't know me, they see that and it gives you a little insight into what's what. But I mean, there is a lot of action and fighting and stuff in my books, and there's also where there's not sort of actual martial arts kind of action, there is a lot of that martial philosophy that comes through in the sort of character and stuff that happens in the stuff that I write. So I mean, especially with the Alex Kane series, that series of books is, I mean, the main character is fundamentally a professional martial artist, and so that one's really based around that stuff. But it kind of pays off well, as you say, as branding. It sort of works well because it's not really specific, but it definitely gives a flavor.
Great. So Alan, I just got started reading Devouring Dark, and I'll tell you, horror is not my thing at all, but I am really intrigued by the character Matt and his challenges, and I want to know more. So, I mean, you really drawn me in. Tell me a little bit about where this story came from and you know, maybe a little bit about the story itself.
Sure. Well, thanks. It's I'm really proud of this book. It's a standalone novel that grew from a short story that I wrote. I'm a really big fan of short fiction. And I had a short story called Shadows of the Lonely Dead out a few years ago, which did really well. It got reprinted in a couple of years' bests. It won me an Australian Shadows Award, which is the National Dark Fiction Awards here in Australia. It was a really popular story, and I knew that there was a bit more to explore with the subject matter of that. And that story, the short story, is focused on Amy Cavendish, who's the other sort of protagonist in Devouring Dark, along with Matt McLeod. And it's basically a story. It is horror, but then the book was also nominated in the Aurealis Awards last year for Best Fantasy Novel. And that seems to be a lot of what I do, that blend of the fantastic and the weird and horror sort of all together. And Devouring Dark's a great example of that, because it's hard to pin down quite where it sits. And that's what I like in terms of genre. But it's, at its most basic, it's exploring the ideas of death and natural justice and people who get away with things and people who don't. And Matt McLeod as a character is plagued by a really deep guilt, which more gets revealed as the story goes on. But he's also got a kind of darkness inside that manifests as this ability to just destroy people with darkness. And so because he's so guilt-ridden, he's desperately trying to put some balance back into his life by taking out people who deserve it with this dark power that he's got. But then he runs afoul of a gangster and a corrupt cop, and then he meets Amy, who has a similar but very different sort of ability, and they all kind of snowball together into a great big mess that they need to extricate themselves from. So this one is, yeah, there's horror fantasy, there's crime, sort of crime noir, there's a little bit of police procedural about it, and yeah, usually as many genres as I can, all just kind of mashed together.
Well, I mean, but you know, it's funny, a lot of people are like, no, you can't mix genres, you can't cross over, you know, it's like Ghostbusters, don't cross the streams, right? Unless you have to. And I think that that's something that a lot of authors miss, which is, our lives are full of many different streams of thought and things going on. And there's absolutely no reason, if it fits the story, to not have fantastical and horror and police procedural all mixed in. I mean, my Extreme Medical Services series is an urban fantasy about paramedics who treat supernatural creatures. And it's very much procedural in the sense that they go on calls in their ambulance to treat people in the midst of the overarching mystery that's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. For me, character always comes first. You need to have strong ideas. You need to have strong story. So there needs to be obviously sort of a point to it, a purpose to it. Usually that comes through exploring a certain theme while following a particular sort of plot and story idea through. There has to be good payoff for that for the reader. But beyond all that, character comes first. And when you have characters playing off each other and you have fantastical elements, supernatural elements, what have you in the story, then all the other things just naturally fit in because, as you say, we live in a world that's a big mashup of everything going on. We're all touched by different things, by crime and by mystery and stuff like that and by romance or whatever. These things all touch our lives as we go through. So really trying to sort of ignore those things in order to strictly stick to a genre strikes me as sort of counterproductive. So it can be hard then to characterize what you do. And a lot of the time, you know, when people say to me, what do you write? It's like, well, I tend to just say I write dark, weird shit because it's just very difficult to really pin down what it is. So you say horror, people think a certain thing. You say fantasy, people think a certain thing. And it takes a long conversation to actually figure out what it is. But for me, it's much more natural and sort of comfortable storytelling that way.
Yeah, and I got to say, Warrior Scribe is a lot better branding than Dark Weird Shit, so I think that's good.
Yeah, exactly.
And you've written quite a few books. I mean, this is a standalone, but it looks like you like to write in series as well, and you've actually collaborated with some others on that. Tell us a little bit about what it's like collaborating with another author.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I've got there's a couple of series under my own name, the Alex Kane series, which is the sort of dark urban fantasy with a martial arts protagonist. There's the Balance series, which is all about sort of gods and monsters and belief and stuff. And I've got a few standalone things, but then there's an action adventure author in the US called David Wood. And he does a lot of what's normally categorized sort of as men's adventure, you know, that kind of like Indiana Jones, Da Vinci Code kind of stuff. And he and I collaborate and we do that stuff, but with slightly occult and supernatural edges. And we do monster stuff. So we've got the Sam Aston Investigations, which are a series of books about an Australian marine biologist who gets drawn into these investigations, trying to explore and discover these fantastical monsters. And the Jake Crowley series, which is a little bit like sort of Da Vinci Code with slightly fantastical and occult edges around the edge. And he's the only person that I collaborate with. It's not an easy thing to do initially, but if you find someone it clicks with, then it works. And Dave and I have discovered that we work really well together. We have very complementary styles in terms of writing. He's very good at plotting, especially with these sort of fast-paced action adventure things. He's very good at plotting those out. I've maybe got a stronger grip on the prose and the characters, and so that's sort of the way that we work and we put these things together. And we try to put out at least one book a year together. We've just released the third of the Jake Crowley books last month, and now we'll be working on the third Sam Aston book sometime in the near future.
I'm intrigued by it. I've actually collaborated with my 25-year-old son on a series together. Six book series. And that's been a lot of fun and very gratifying, but he's not an author. You know, we were writing a fantasy game lit series and he's very much a fantasy and sci-fi gamer. And I wanted that gaming feel, even though I've always been a tabletop RPG player, I wanted something that was more modern and computer based. And he and I collaborated on that, but I did the heavy lifting from a writing standpoint. So I've always been curious about how people divide up the tasks when there's two authors coming together, because every single author I've ever interviewed or talked to, they all have such very different process for coming up with their words that I find it interesting how anyone could collaborate.
Well, with Dave and myself, we did start sort of trying just passing a manuscript back and forth, building it as we went, which sort of worked. But as the process went on, we discovered that the way things work best is we'll like think about an idea back and forth. We'll have a lot of Skype sessions and we'll talk a lot about ideas until we pin down the general shape of what we want to do with the book. And then Dave will go away and he'll write a really detailed outline. And we call that draft 0.5. And so then he'll send back to me a chapter by chapter breakdown. And, you know, sometimes these things can be, there can be a 15 or 20,000 word outline, which is really detailed. And then from that, I'll write the entire first draft. So then I'll go and I'll write the full sort of 80, 90,000 word first draft of the book from that outline. And then that draft then goes back and forth between us as we both sort of add and subtract and polish it up until we're happy with the finished product. And that works best. So a lot of the big sort of plot structure and ideas that we've worked out are put together by Dave, and then it's actually written mostly by myself, and then we sort of smooth it out from there. And it depends where things are. If we're in, because I was born and raised in the UK but now live in Australia, so anything in those countries I get the final say on dialogue and description and stuff. And anything based in the US, that's where Dave is, so he gets the final say on getting those dialogue parts right and things like that. And that's kind of how it balances out. And we've done 6 books together now, so we're sort of finding our thing, and we've got quite a decent process going now.
Well, and it looks like they're very well received and reviewed. So, I mean, people are liking them, and that's ultimately the big test, isn't it?
That is, and it's really gratifying. Yeah, these the Jake Crowley series and the Sam Astin investigations, both series have been really well received. And yeah, they're doing really well for us, and it's really exciting. And hopefully that then, you know, also pays back for both of us into our solo work and everything else. So it's really exciting to see. And the new Jake Crowley book that just dropped last month has ranked pretty well, and people are still into the idea and into the characters. So that's great.
Well, I'll definitely make sure I link to those as well, even though I know that wasn't on the list to talk about too much, but it just intrigued me and I wanted to get into it a little bit. I do want to talk about your short fiction, because this is something you've done quite a bit of short fiction, it appears, just looking at your bio and stuff. You've got a new collection of short fiction coming out in September called Served Cold, with 16 stories, which is really exciting to see that not only do you write these novels and these longer stories and standalones and series and whatnot, but that these shorter stories seem to come out of you as well. The short story format has never been something that's appealed to me very much.
I love short stories. I don't know why I find them so appealing, but I do. I first discovered them when I was really young, and I discovered a Roald Dahl book on my parents' bookshelf. And I knew Roald Dahl from kids' stories, but didn't realize that he wrote short fiction for adults. So I picked up this book thinking that it would be a Roald Dahl story, like, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or something. And it was these weird and twisted, bizarre short stories, and just blew my young mind. And I discovered a love of short fiction from there, and would seek out lots of other people. And then I started reading a lot of horror short stories as well. And then after I discovered the Books of Blood by Clive Barker, I was just hooked on short fiction. I love the format. I love what you can do with the ideas you can play with. And so I've always written short fiction as well. And I've had some 80 something short stories published over the years. And I had a short story collection called Crow Shine that was published in 2016, and that won me an Australian Shadows Award, which has been a really well-received book. And now, a few years later, there's a few more short stories sold and more collected up. So Grey Matter Press are putting out next month Served Cold, which is, yeah, another collection. So a lot of it is reprints of stories that have been published elsewhere, either in anthologies or magazines. Some of them are out of print. Some of them are still around. But Served Cold also has 3 completely original stories written just for that book, including one long novelette at the end, which is like a sort of 15,000 word story at the end of that book. So yeah, that's coming out next month. And I just saw a draft of the cover, which was awesome. So I'm very excited about that coming out soon.
You know, it's funny. I love getting covers and you know, just seeing that, you know, an artist's representation of a description of my work. It's kind of a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's always exciting. And you first see it and it's never quite what you expect. You're never sure what to expect. And if it's one of those ones, it hits you and you go, oh, wow, wasn't expecting that. But then you're just staring at it and you can't stop looking at it. And you're like, oh, okay, this is good. This is, you know, this struck me. And that's exactly what happened to me yesterday when Grey Matter Press sent through the draft idea for this for Served Cold. It was, yeah, it was like a punch in the face. It's like, cool, that's going to be good. So very excited.
Have you ever seen a cover and seen an element in the cover that wasn't necessarily from your story and go, oh my gosh, I want to add that to the story?
I have seen that. I've never thought to myself, oh, I really want to put that into the story, but I have seen stuff that's not really in the story, but it's kind of like an oblique reference to the story or to the style, especially with a collection where there's so many different stories and different ideas. The cover has to be something that captures a vibe rather than a story specifically. So I often get sort of blown away by these ideas. It's the same sometimes when you read reviews and people talk about something in this that they got from a story that was clearly a really integral element to them of their reading experience. And you look at it and you're like, wow, I didn't plan that. I didn't write that. I had no idea. You know?
I know you have some audiobooks too. And you know, what's your thought about listening to your work read back to you, or performed, I should say, back to you by another performer or another artist? Because it's funny, I had another author I was talking to recently who swore to me that she hated the concept of audiobooks, that she didn't want to have someone read to her. And I'm like, I said, you've never listened to an audiobook? And she's like, no, I would never do that. So I sent her one of my audiobooks. I'm like, all right, you need to listen to an audiobook, because it's not a reading, it's a performance. And she sent back to me today that she loved it. And now that narrator is the narrator of her life.
She's got a voice for her life now. That's great.
Do you have the same feeling? I'm always thrilled to listen to my stuff being performed.
A little bit of both. I love audiobooks. I listen to audiobooks all the time. I've always got one on the go. So when I'm walking the dog or driving in the car, I'm listening to a book usually. I listen to a lot of short fiction podcasts as well for the same reason. So sort of people performing short stories. I really enjoy that as well. When it comes to my own work, I don't find it so intriguing, because I listen to it sort of too critically. Like, I am a lot more forgiving of performances of other people's stuff than I am of my own. And so sometimes when you have an audio book come through and you need to proof the audio files before they go live and stuff like that, I kind of find that a little bit tedious and stressful. But by the same token, I know how much I enjoy audiobooks, and I assume everybody who's not me listens to my work in audiobook and gets the same sort of enjoyment from it for that. So I am thrilled that my stuff, or not all of it, but a lot of my stuff is in audio. I'm really glad of that, because apart from the fact, as you say, that it's like a performance of your work, it's a whole new medium. It's also a very fast growing sales channel for work. Audiobooks are becoming very popular, and a lot of people are only reading in audio now. So it's important, I think, to have your work available that way.
It absolutely is. And it's actually my audiobook sales are almost to the point where, you know, it's equal to my ebook and paperback sales. It's astounding to me. And it's actually been something I've been pushing for, is now trying to get as close as I can to simultaneous release of everything, because people are really enjoying the audiobooks. And like you said, there are some people who are like, well, when's the audiobook coming out? Because they don't read anymore. They want to listen to it.
Yeah, I get it all the time when I do conventions. If I'm a guest at Comic-Con or Supernova or something like that, and people come over and they're interested and they're having a look, and lots of people are always asked, so is it in audio? Can I get it on Audible? And I always have to go, okay, well, you can get that one, and that one, but not these. So we're trying to, slowly as we go along, we're trying to fix that and make sure that everything's available in audio. But it is definitely a growth market. I know a friend of mine over here who's an epic fantasy author, And he turned down a really big deal with a traditional Big Five publisher because he had a better offer from Audible for the audiobook. And so he self-published print and ebook because the offer from Audible was so lucrative that he turned down a traditional deal. So, I mean, that's a little snapshot of how things are changing, because, you know, the traditional publisher didn't want to go ahead without audio. And he said, well, you can have print and for ebooks, but not audio. And they said no. So he said, okay, well, I'll stick with what I got. So he self-published the books in order to sign the Audible deal, which, gives a good insight into how things are changing.
Yeah, I'm an indie published author, and I wouldn't do it any other way. But I think I've been an entrepreneur all my life. So when I became an author, and independent publishing was out there, I was like, well, this is going to be the way I go, because I want the control of everything. I want to own my, it's just who I am. And some people, that's not as important to them, but I want to be in control of my whole business. So that's just my thing. But it is an amazing marketplace.
It is. I do a little bit indie, and most of the stuff I do is through trad, either large or small press. And that's mainly because I don't want to learn the skills of the layout and the design and all that stuff and have to manage all that back end stuff. I'm glad for publishers to do that for me. But then equally, every once in a while, I can't help but sort of look at things and go, man, maybe I should just take it all on myself and manage it all myself, because there is a definite appeal to that from an entrepreneurial sort of point of view. So, but I'm kind of happy in the niche. I'm very much a hybrid at the moment. I got some trad stuff with the Big Five. I got some with small press and some indie. And so I'm happy ticking along like that at the moment. But that's the beauty of the industry the way it is now. There are numerous options to suit different people.
Absolutely. And I never presume to tell anybody how they should go. It is important for you to be comfortable in whatever, hybrid or one way or the other kind of method you fall upon, because you're right. There's a lot of headache to, owning any business, and certainly an author business is no different. So I completely understand it. So we're going to kind of get close to wrapping up here. So I want to make sure people know where to find you. Is there a place you prefer? You mentioned going to cons, and certainly people should, I guess, be encouraged to come up and talk to you when you're there, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love doing the convention circuit. It's a lot smaller in Australia than in the US, obviously. I got out to StokerCon in the US last year, and that was fantastic. I'll be going to StokerCon in the UK next year in April. But I'm a guest at Oz Comic Con in Sydney at the end of September. So that'll be the next thing I'm doing. So definitely, if people are around Sydney, come and say hi. And that'll be the first time I have copies of Served Cold as well, the new collection that will have just come out. So the publisher assures me they'll get copies to me in time for Comic Con. So that's an exciting sort of development. But otherwise, I'm always around online. I'm on Twitter far too much. That's just my name, Alan Baxter, ALANBAXTER. And Alan Baxter Online or warriorscribe.com to find my website, and all my social media links and stuff are there. And I've got a Facebook group as well called Alan Baxter Books, which is a fairly new thing where we're just kind of hanging out. I'm trying out groups just to see how that goes rather than pages or whatever. So if anybody wants to come and check that out, then they can just come and search that up on Facebook.
All right. Well, I'll make sure I send some of my folks, tell my people in my group to head over and check it out, because, groups get a lot more engagement than pages do. And, it's actually, I've had a lot of fun kind of building my group, getting away from the pages a little bit more myself. So I wish you luck on that.
Well, thanks. That's exactly what I was told and what I've been learning. So yeah, just in the last few weeks, I've made that jump to see how we go, and it's good so far. It's grown. It's only a couple of weeks old, and it's growing, and it's good fun. There's interaction there, and that's nice. That's what we want.
Definitely. Well, Alan, thanks for coming on the show. I'd love to have you back on, maybe, 6 months to a year, whenever you got something else coming out, or maybe we can even get you and David on together and kind of talk a little bit about a joint project you're working on.
Yeah, for sure. I'll talk to Dave about it and let him know. I'm sure we can probably line something up. No problem.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for coming on, and we'll have you back soon.
Great. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us online for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode in the podcast area there. Let me know what's on your mind or have a question for Alan, whatever the case may be. Leave those comments there and we will get back to you. Also on the website, on each podcast episode page, you'll find links at the top to subscribe to the show right there below the player in the post. So go ahead and click those links, whether it's iOS, Android, or you're using apps like Stitcher or TuneIn. Even you can subscribe by email if you want. But you want to do that so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes, because we have some pretty awesome authors scheduled. We've got some people coming up in the next few months, including author and publisher James Hunter, who will be on the very next episode. And you'll want to keep up and listen for that one. We had a great time chatting, and he talks a little bit about his books, about writing, and about meeting people at places like DragonCon, where he will be attending in the next week or so after this episode comes out. So if you're actually going to Atlanta and going to DragonCon, make sure you look up James Hunter there in his booth where he has his Shadow Alley Press selling books and signing books and everything else there in the author area. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and over at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where if you want to check out something I've written, go ahead and get a free book just for signing up and getting my newsletter over there. Whatever you do, though, you want to make sure you subscribe and come back here for the next podcast. And while you're waiting, in the meantime, I'll remind you to make sure you keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.